The OTB Podcast Network with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.
OTB
AM. At 14 minutes past 8, it's time for us to say good morning to David Moyler. David, how are you getting on?
Good morning. How are we?
Alice in Blunderland is the headline on every single one of the newspapers. They all decided everybody else is going to use this, but it's too good. We have to use it too. I don't remember anybody as brilliant as like world class having three bad minutes, as bad and as catastrophic for one individual. What happened to them?
I don't know. Just second guessed himself. If you watch Jurgen Klopp's interview after the game, he spoke about, you know, like the options that were available to him, especially in the very first one where he has the ball around the edge of the box. He kind of dwindles and he takes his time. And then he just obviously misplaces the pass. But those 3 minutes were just ludicrous. Keeper of his experience, you don't expect it. But at the same time, look, he saved Liverpool time after time. I don't think Liverpool fans would be too disappointed or too annoyed. Of course, look, probably ended Liverpool's title challenge. Is now City are 10 points clear of the game in hand. So it was very frustrating, but at the same time, look, these things do happen. He's human. He made mistakes, but he's certainly saved Liverpool time after time.
I think listening to the lads on commentary yesterday, they kept coming back to the point that last year when Manchester City had to play Fernandinho at centre-back for so long, it caught up with them eventually. And over the course of the season, there have been games where Henderson's been great at centre-back, where Fabinho's been good for a long period, but over the course of the season, against some of the best strikers in the world, and particularly against some of the best attacking talent in the world, it's going to, on the amount of chances that you give up, it's eventually going to catch up with you, and it's caught up with them over the last month.
No, definitely. I've been on here talking about, you know, Jordan obviously playing centre-half, but it wasn't a case that I didn't think Jordan could play centre-half. It was more of a case of they missed him massively in midfield. And I think certainly yesterday was kind of like a game like that where his desire, determination, his leadership in the middle to kind of sustain attacks, be able to break up counter-attacks. And like you touched on there, Man City last year and Fernandinho playing centre-half, it does take its toll. And it is a big disappointment in the way, in the manner it's kind of unfolded probably in the last 5 weeks. Certainly with some of the games where they've dropped points, you know, the Burnley, West Brom, etc. That'll be the frustrating thing. Look, when you play a team like Manchester City who have so much talent and they have world-class players everywhere, that if you do make mistakes, then you'll be punished. But it's the points that they're dropping against the teams that, you know, they shouldn't really be. But look, they just need to now dust themselves down. Like Jurgen said, top four is the next target, and they've got to make sure that they're still in the Champions League and all that, because, you know, on recent form, it's not been fantastic. Do I think they'll make top four? Yes, I do. But at the same time, Chelsea are on a good run. Do you know, Everton have games in hand, then you've got Leicester and United who are ahead of them. So it's going to be tough, but I still think they'll do it.
Roy Keane, in the aftermath of the game, described Liverpool as bad champions. He questioned the mentality of doing back-to-back titles and that Liverpool were potentially missing that. Do you agree with that at all, that there has been something off about Liverpool this season on a mental level?
Yeah, there. Look, I think it's pretty obvious to see. Liverpool haven't been at the races. Not in every game, or not like, you know, there has been moments of brilliance, but, you know, for the hammering they took against Aston Villa, you know, that then, like I spoke on the West Brom game, there's just been so many different games, the Southampton game, that you just expect Liverpool to win, and they just, you know, they're not. And that's the big thing. I know Roy said they're bad champions. It's a lot easier for him to comment on something like that for someone who's won 7 Premier League titles. You know, he's won, I think it's three consecutive Premier Leagues, so like back to back. So like, he understands what it takes. Maybe it is a case of Liverpool have been mentally drained from the challenge of the last few seasons. And, you know, I wouldn't say it's a touch of Liverpool's arrogance saying that we are that good of a team. I think they're just, teams are doubling down on them and finding it, you know, a lot. They're finding ways to stop them, and Liverpool just haven't found solutions.
City are amazing, though, as well. That's the other thing that, like, you know, they are going up against a historically good Manchester City team. I mean, maybe this team isn't the same team as 2 seasons ago. Like, it obviously isn't. There's no Silva, there's no Kompany, there's no Aguero. But the current team, and the evolution of Phil Foden and Gundogan, like that. Pep Guardiola knows a thing or two about football, it turns out.
Yeah, he does. And I found it really fascinating. I love listening to Pep Guardiola. And if you look at his post-match interview, he speaks about, you know, obviously he was asked about Phil Foden playing as kind of that false nine, that inverted commas striker. And he kind of criticized his first half performance for the positions he was picking up. He wasn't, you know, in the right areas all the time. And he said, we had to make tactical changes because if we had played Liverpool the way that, you know, we have in the past, in the transitions, Liverpool would beat us because of the speed that they carry. But for him to identify that in key moments and switch things, and then, like you said, like Phil Foden's 20 years of age, and you know, he grabbed the game by storm in the sense of his performance. He was incredible. And you're talking about, you know, Manchester City, like their three best players coming into the start of the season would have been Aguero, De Bruyne and Laporte. And they've had to deal with them, you know, for good chunks, missing certainly Aguero and Laporte more than De Bruyne. He has featured quite a bit. But, you know, to go to Anfield without those three and put in a performance like that and win 4-1, it's just incredible. And what he's been able to do, and you touched on Gundogan, Gary Neville highlighted that he's probably been player of the season, and he really has stepped up to the mark without De Bruyne. And even in the games where Kevin was there, he's scoring a lot more. And it's a case of he's always been kind of that deep lying, you know, playmaker who's getting on the ball. And now he's just evolved, like, and he's really breaking the lines to get into the box. And you look at the goals he scored, and, you know, he's got 8 and 10, which is phenomenal for a midfielder. And look, he also missed a penalty in the game as well. It's just, you know, what Guardiola has done with that group of players has been incredible. And even if you look at their back four, like, of course, you know, signing Ruben Diaz, a lot of money. People then, that you look at, say, Chelsea, the signings they've had, they've not hit the ground running. Ruben Diaz has come in, albeit, yes, he made a mistake yesterday for the penalty, but he's hit the ground running, who looks like an unbelievable centre-half. And then you've got, like, John Stones, who has this rebirth, you know, and then they've got Cancelo, who last year everyone was kind of writing him off. He's been unbelievable. And then they've got Zinchenko. And if you look at that as a back four, to think that that was the back four that was going to go on and win you a Premier League title, at the start of the season, people probably laughed it off, but it just shows you what Guardiola has done with that group of players.
Yeah, it's a really good point. On Phil Foden, what is his best position, first of all, David? Like, because I think he moved from a false nine into different positions yesterday. What's your sense on that?
I don't know. Because, like, he played yesterday as kind of the false nine. Of course, look, as Pep said, he's going to learn what Pep wants from him. But when he goes out on the left, or he goes out on the right, or he drops a little bit deeper into a 10, the boy's just naturally gifted. And he spoke in his interview after about courage and getting on the ball. Like, he just wants the ball everywhere. And he has all the traits that you'd look for in a young player. You know, he's confident. He can get on the half turn. He can drive forward. He can run with the ball. He can see a pass. Like, he can pick a pass. He's comfortable in possession. And he scores goals. Like, you look at, you know, the fourth goal. You know, people will have question marks over Alisson. But in that moment where he picks it up and he just shifts it in, it's all in one movement where he comes in. And the power he generates on that ball, like he touched on after, he hasn't struck a ball cleaner. Like, that boy really does have the world at his feet.
He's been spoken about as the most talented of this bunch of young England footballers at the moment, that this is the one player above all else. There is no one you can put above him at the moment when you look at the hope that English football fans have in their team at the moment. Would you be extra confident if you were an English football fan with the fact that Pep Guardiola is his manager, that at times this season there has been a little bit of frustration, I'd imagine, watching him because he just hasn't been given as many minutes as a lot of people would have liked? But in the long run, I'm sure that'll have a benefit for someone like Phil Foden.
Of course. Look, you touch on minutes there. Like, he's played 100 games for Manchester City already. That's unheard of. Yeah. And especially this City team. It's not like, you know, 10, 15 years ago when City weren't challenging for titles or whatever. He's coming in, he's like, those number of games are staggering. And the simple thing is, like, England fans will be excited by him. Like, you know, they've got an exceptional, I'm envious and I'm jealous because I'm Irish, that, you know, they look at you like, you've got Greenwood, you've got Mason Mount, Jack Grealish, Phil Foden, of course, there, Mason Mount. They've got all these creative players, and it's phenomenal. And the big thing for them is he is working with Pep Guardiola, and you see how highly he speaks of him. And you think, like, he's obviously been manager of Barcelona, the players he's dealt with there, Bayern Munich. Like, he's had so much. And he credits Phil Foden as one of the most important youngsters that he's worked with. And I think that speaks volumes. It's just now, for any English fan, is how does, you know, Gareth Southgate find the way to get the best out of him? Like I said there, Guardiola made a slight change yesterday because, like, Phil Foden was in the first half, but he wasn't as effective as he was in the second half. And that was a big thing, that he was able to, you know, tinker his tactical formation to get him right into the game. And he was, look, the boy is gifted.
And that is the really terrifying thing over the next couple of seasons, actually, for opponents of Manchester City, to not only be able to match them in terms of what they're going to do in the transfer market if it requires, and Ruben Dias proved that this season, but because of the talent that they already have and how good this guy is going to get and a couple of the other stars around him in that team.
No, of course. Look, that's the beauty of it. He's only 20 and he's learning. He's only going to get, like, he should only get better and better. And, you know, you look around the kind of group of him, he's got someone like Raheem Sterling, who's still relatively young, who's still got a lot of years to play. Like, he'll learn from him in different experiences. Of course, look, if you remember the last time Foden was with, you know, away with England, he had that setback of the, you know, the texting situation where they were chasing young girls. And then to think, like, the pressure that came with that and how, you know, Guardiola would have dealt with that. He'll learn from, like, not only instances off the field, but on the pitch too. And he'll only keep developing and become better and better.
Sterling's only 26. And when you think about, obviously, the historic links that they have with Erling Haaland and the fact that Haaland's probably going to do one more season at Dortmund, Messi might want to come there next season. Life's pretty good if you're a Manchester City fan right now.
No, definitely. And, like, the scary thing is, like, my wife's family, well, like, my in-laws, I should just say, really, they're all Manchester City fans. And, like, they're excited, because you just know that Pep Guardiola will identify, you know, a target, and, you know, he'll get backed. You know, you're talking there about Haaland. That's probably the only thing they're crying out for, even though they're top of the league and cruising. It's kind of like Aguero has picked up that many injuries. Like, what he has done over the last few years has been phenomenal. So they're looking, you know, there was another talk over here about Harry Kane, you know, someone who knows league to score a lot of goals. But if they get in that kind of natural number nine who's going to consistently be fit, score 25, you know, plus goals a season, like, they're looking at a, you know, dominance over the next 2-3 seasons.
It definitely seems that way. Like, if you look at what Liverpool then, just because this is the context of how we're analysing this in the aftermath of yesterday, what are the questions that Jurgen Klopp needs to be asking of his superiors at Anfield? What are the things that he needs on his shopping list this summer to ensure that Manchester City don't make this gap even bigger over the course of the next 12 months?
Well, the big thing was that everyone has always said it was the front three, obviously, have been incredible for the last few seasons. It's kind of who is next in line. You know, there had been Shaqiri, Origi. That drop in level was, like, significant. You look at Manchester City's, could you name their starting front three? Probably not, because he could play, like, okay, somebody would probably hit me the argument, Sterling, Aguero play a lot. But then you've got Bernardo Silva, you've got Phil Foden, you've got Riyad Mahrez, you know, they have very, very good replacements. And I think that was the big thing with Liverpool. And then when they signed Jota and, you know, the form he was in, the consistency that he was hitting, you know, for him to pick up that injury was massive. Because in certain games, Jurgen was able to take out, you know, Mane or Salah or Firmino and play Jota, who could come in and maintain that. I think the big thing is they probably need to get the next level, is like knocking on the door, pushing at it, so that, like, you know, that they're putting the front three under pressure, which then drives them on to improve and, you know, obviously hit those level of consistencies that we've seen over the last few years.
I mean, Minamino scored a cracker at the weekend. That was one of those, it was like, all right. I mean, that's obviously why Liverpool were interested in him in the first place. But it is that strength and depth that Manchester City have that clearly Liverpool don't have at the moment. And look, I guess when Virgil comes back, we'll see what next season looks like. And when they have a first choice centre-back partnership, or four good centre-backs who will be fit for the whole year and this year doesn't repeat. You know, we need someone to be good enough to go toe-to-toe at Manchester City. Otherwise, there will be a lot of seasons where Manchester City have the title wrapped up by the start of February, and that's not really good for football. What about what happened to Manchester United at the weekend? Because, you know, we've been trying desperately to sell ourselves on the whole, oh, maybe they're going to be the team that emerges from the pack, but they're miles off being championship contenders really at this point.
Yeah, and I genuinely don't believe that people, you know, really deep down, of course, look, United fans, I love it. A lot of my mates are Manchester United fans. They backed themselves. They felt that they were in, you know, the hunt. I'd come on here months ago, certainly on the Saturday when I was on with the lads, saying that like Manchester City were always going to come back. You knew that. But with United, I think they really just kind of shot themselves in the foot. I think the key part of the game against Everton the other day was probably, you know, substitution to Pogba, which then, you know, Fred coming on, they kind of lost control of midfield. They were very dominant, you know, throughout the game. They still had a lot of good chances, but in a sense of, you know, conceding in the 95th minute or whatever it was, 94th, 95th minute, they kind of lose that momentum. And then, of course, you know, knowing that City are playing Liverpool, you're kind of then hoping at that stage Liverpool get a result for City to win. It's just kind of opened the gap up even more. But I definitely think, you know, United have had massive strides of progression in the last year. And I think Ali is doing good stuff. It's just now, once the summer comes, they're probably going to have to identify, because, you know, identify targets to come in. Because if you look at Cavani, yes, he's exceptional. I've always been a big fan of him because he's a very clever player, but they're now relying on a 34, 35 year old to kind of lead the line. That shouldn't be the case, because you're not going to be able to squeeze 2-3 years of them and progress on. United have always, you know, had players in their kind of mid to late 20s where they know that they can get years out of them, and then they do tend to bring in that older, experienced striker. So United, they're nearly there, but they're not there yet.
They're also one of those teams who they've got to prove it over the course of a full season for us, because, you know, if you think back to the start of the season when they had a historically bad start to the Premier League season, you think back to last year where they were awful for the start and then brilliant after lockdown. They've been wildly inconsistent essentially since Ferguson's gone, but under Solskjaer, it's fair to pinpoint that. You wouldn't be terribly surprised if their form deserted them for a 5 or 6 week period, and suddenly Chelsea are ahead of them, Liverpool are ahead of them, Leicester are ahead of them, and they're in a scrap for a top four position.
No, but you have to weigh up everything. Look at Liverpool over the last 5 weeks. They've had that sticky patch. Obviously, Frank Lampard lost his job because of Chelsea's form, and then Tuchel comes in and, Jimmy, they got 3 wins and a draw out of his first 4 games. Man City at the start of the season were all over the place as well. Then they found that consistency after, you know, losing to Spurs. They go on an unbelievable winning streak. So it is possible that teams can hit bad forms. I think that is the most frustrating thing with United fans. You know, they've lost 4 games at home this season, which is unheard of. It's kind of, it is that, you know, we've asked this question numerous times about, you know, do fans make a difference? Of course they do. United, I played there, I don't know, half a dozen times. It is a horrible place to go as an opposing player because the pitch is so big. You know, you've got 70, 80,000 there screaming, and then United just dominate the game. And I think that is a big thing for Liverpool as well. So United need to, you know, find a way to get that consistency, because like you said, Chelsea are in a good run of form. You know, you expect Liverpool to react. Of course, I'd expect United to react. But Everton have 2 games at hand, which could bring them up by the top four. So it is really now, it will be a scrap on for the rest of the season to see who does finish up in the, you know, the second, third and fourth. I can't really see Manchester City being caught. I think everything is just going for them, and, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how the top four does finish up.
Harry Maguire was taking a lot of flack for the last minute equaliser from Everton.
Yeah.
Is it a function of him not trusting the people around him? Is it him making a mental error? Is it that they don't actually have a very clearly defined defensive policy at Manchester United? What's the reason for what happened?
Well, I've looked at the, you know, Dominic Calvert-Lewin's goal several times, and it's kind of, it is an interesting one, because with a wide free kick, you'd always set your lineup. Do you know what I mean? You'd have your first man would line up and they line across the edge of the box. You automatically do drop 2-3 yards. And it seems that Harry is kind of the only one who drops. And that's the frustration with Manchester United fans, where he kind of then tends to keep the players. But I'd be looking certainly at the rest of them. Why have they not dropped together? Now, somebody has made a call. Harry's made a call to drop. The rest have made the call to stay up that bit further. Now, when a team decides to kind of stay up, usually the keeper starts 2-3 yards out and comes and gathers the ball. If they drop, then the keeper stays back. So I think there is, you know, a communication error between them. Certainly there in that instance, I'd be looking at my goalkeeper, you know, where are you there? You know, you've got to be getting out and be brave, be courageous, go and, you know, go and win us the game. You know, when you say when a striker goes through, put the ball away. I want my keeper there to come flying around. I want them to come out and clean the striker out and win the ball and kind of, you know, be that dominant force in his, you know, 6-yard box. And it didn't happen. And it came down basically to Calvert-Lewin wanting the ball more.
Is that a policy decision made during the week in training? Or is it like in that moment they've decided this is how we're going to defend?
No, that would be done. All that stuff is done well before. You iron out your set pieces. You nearly go over them every week. You know, they'll watch videos on Everton, whoever they're playing. Like, obviously, I know it's at the Everton game we're speaking about. But they'll have watched them. Do Everton do anything different on corners, wide free kicks? They'll have worked on that. But for some reason, the line hasn't dropped with Harry. And then from the flip side of that, when you see a slow-mo or you see a standstill photograph of it, it looks awful. But at the same time, if I were him, I'd be questioning, why haven't they dropped with me? Because of the distances, like David Gea doesn't come out 4 or 5 yards. It's not like he's out by the edge of the 6 yard that he can come and collect the cross. So I'm saying, as a front man, and of course, look, Harry's captain, you've got to drop with me. But for some reason, they haven't, and it's ended up costing them. But like you allude then to, you know, Harry, there's just been this big thing. As much as him and Lindelof have done well in games, I just don't think the pairing fits. I think Harry is better suited with Eric Bailly. Maybe it's that touch more pace that Bailly he has, but it's not working, and they're shipping way too many goals. Like, of course, the Corey's goal is, you know, gifted to him by De Gea, where he fumbles it out. You've got to give Rodriguez a bit of credit because it's a wonderful strike. But in the sense of the goals that they're shipping, that's not like United. You know, you expect United to kind of be on the front foot attacking, but they've always been able to keep clean sheets. Like, to be conceding 3 goals at home isn't great. So Harry's going to take some slack, certainly as, you know, an £80 million signing who's, you know, the captain of Manchester United.
Yeah, that's the ball game, unfortunately, from his perspective. And that's why the slack is coming. David, great to have you with us this morning. Thanks a million.
Cheers, guys.
David Moyle giving us his thoughts there on the weekend's football. You can continue to give us your thoughts on the weekend's football as well. 0879 180 180. We'll bring you some of those comments in just a few minutes' time as well. OTBAM brought to you each morning with thanks to Gillette. Good morning. Start with Gillette, giving you the confidence to tackle the day ahead. What are we at? 8:37 exactly this morning. Going to hear from Brian Kerr a little bit later on, and we're going to talk the Super Bowl, Kieran Fahey, just before 9 o'clock. But first, here's Damien Delaney, who was on live commentary duty, as I said, for OTB yesterday as Manchester City annihilated Liverpool.
So, Liverpool beaten 4-1 by Manchester City. Damien Delaney was on co-commentary. Is that the title race done, Damien?
Yeah, it feels like a seismic day, to be honest with you. It feels like there has been that shift. They put themselves in the position and the others fell away the last week. The week with Manchester United had with the loss of Sheffield United, the draw against Arsenal, the draw last night, their challenge has just fallen away now. I think it was always going to be a big ask for Liverpool. I mean, even if they won today and they got themselves within 4 points, when you look at the cut of their squad, it would have been very, very difficult for them even then to maintain pace with Manchester City, because Manchester City have kind of off the bridle now and they're going, so it would have been difficult for them. But Manchester United were the one where they were on a similar run to City, you know, real, real good run at the minute. But when rubber met the road, Manchester United just fell away. And that today was a dagger in the rest of the Premier League.
What is going on with Liverpool? They have injuries, but is it too easy to put the blame at those absences of Van Dijk and Gomez and Matip? It feels as though there's something greater going on with the lack of energy, the lack of goals.
Yeah, look, there's two main problems that I see with Liverpool, and the obvious one is centre back, and you can't get away from that. And it's not an excuse, and it's not people saying that, you know, it's an excuse, you're excusing Liverpool. They've got two central midfield players playing there. They've had kids untried, untested, with Phillips and Williams coming in there. Fabinho's done a great job, but he's not going to last the season there. Henderson now is back, and you've the double whammy of losing them out of the middle of the park as well. Manchester City had the exact same problem last year with Fernandinho. Rodri wasn't quite up to speed, and Fernandinho was kind of playing centre-back. He'd done great at the start of the season, but when push came to shove, he ran out of steam as well, and then they got phoned out. They've remedied that with Diaz, and I think Liverpool need to, I suppose, get lucky with one of these two centre-back pairings, because they've took a risk with them. They've not gone done what Manchester City have done and bought, you know, proven quality in Diaz. They've gone with a young lad from Preston and a guy that probably most of them have never heard of, to be honest with you, from Turkey. So they need to get lucky, and one of them needs to come in, hit the road running and lift everyone else. The other problem that I believe they have is the front three have been on the road for a long time, and I have said it, that they can't keep pushing the front three as much as what they do. You've got so much out of them.
Is that in terms of the energy or just in terms of the style of play that they're quite predictable at this stage?
Both are married into each other. You know, the style of play is hugely taxing on the body. You know, the energy levels required to play the way that they play and to keep flogging the same three players every season for the last three seasons. And they have been brilliant. They tried to remedy it this year with bringing Jota in. Again, it was a bit of a gamble. It was a bit of a, oh, we hope we get lucky. They didn't go out and spend 50, 60, 70, 80 million on somebody and bought proven quality. But luckily, Jota worked out for them and he was brilliant. But now he's injured. So those three are back in again. There was a period just before Christmas where Firmino was out of the team and Jota came in and done really, really well in the Champions League and the Premier League. And everyone said, oh, well, that's the end of Firmino. It's not. You know, you've four players for three positions and you rotate the three of them in. Note, unfortunately, Jota's got injured and been out of the team. So as soon as they get him back fit, in the summer, Liverpool need a little bit of, I was far to say a rebuild.
But I was going to ask, yeah. Does it need to be a transformational summer? Because they do have Thiago now, they have Jota to come back, they've bought a couple of centre-halves, they've sent Minamino out on loan and to get some game time. When you look at that Liverpool squad, does it need an addition of three, four players to get themselves back challenging next season?
It needs some surgery, absolutely. And I think there is some money that will need to be spent. You know, Liverpool have been brilliant in the transfer market in recouping money, and their net spend isn't an amazing amount. I think this summer is the time where the owners really need to put their hands in the pocket, you know, and really say, listen, here's 120 million quid. Go and buy yourself a centre-back. Hopefully Virgil van Dijk will come back the same player that he was. Let's go and spend some serious money on a front three and then maybe help in the full-back area as well where they're light. You know, the full-backs seem to be on the same trajectory the front three are on. You're flogging them to death every week. The two of them have been asked to play, Trent and Robertson. They're up and down every week. It's seriously taxing on the body. It would be nice if they had somebody that could fill in for them.
What about Jurgen Klopp's role in all of this and their decline over the last 3 months? He's won a Premier League title, he's won a Champions League title over the last two seasons, but does he deserve any criticism, or should there be any questions asked of him of what's gone wrong for Liverpool over the last 3 months?
The only way you'd criticise Jurgen Klopp for me is if, and you'd have to be privy to the conversation that went on with the director of football and the owners, I'm pretty sure he would have been begging for reinforcements. You know, everybody could see it that the front three were beginning to lag. You know, you could see it at the beginning of the season, form was in and out. Obviously, Salah has contractual issues. So I'm pretty certain that every day he's speaking to the director of football and the owners saying, I need money, I need money, I need money. They haven't backed him because they probably thought they were his genius, they'd figure out a way to get it done. But I think this is proof now that Jurgen Klopp, you know, as great and all as he is, and he is a fantastic manager, you know, you can't make wine out of water, unfortunately. So they need to put their hands in their pockets this summer. Well, I suppose immediately they need to concentrate on getting in the top four. That's probably their biggest one now. I think the Champions League is going to end pretty soon with the form that they're in. I mean, they're going to get ruthlessly exposed, if not by Leipzig, but definitely by the team they meet the next round. That'll probably be the end of it for them. So I suppose the best they can hope for this season is get by Leipzig, maybe get a nice night out or a game against Juventus or, you know, one of the giants of Europe, and it'll be a nice night, and then cement top four, but really start looking to next season.
What about Manchester City then?
Yeah.
Without Kevin De Bruyne, without Sergio Aguero, so they have their own injury problems, but the form of Gundogan, of Sterling and of Phil Foden, 14 straight victories in all competitions. When you compare them, and maybe it's unfair to compare them to the City side of 2-3 years ago, are they getting towards that level now?
They're on the way, but I'm pretty sure if you and me sat down and went over the last 14 games, we watched all of them, there'll be periods in the games and probably periods in that time period where Man City weren't great, but they were rock solid at the back. You know, so the games they didn't play well and they nicked 1-0 or they nicked a 2-1, it was built because they're rock solid goalkeeper, centre back number six. You know, so they keeps the momentum going. Unfortunately, Liverpool don't have that, but Manchester City at the minute are on this winning run, not because of all these fantastic players, it's because of the lads at the back. What is it? How many? 7-8 clean sheets, I think it is. You know, and very, very, how many goals conceded in the 14? It's only four or something, is it?
I think that's their 14th goal they've conceded all season.
Yeah, but in that 14 winning games, I think it's only two or three they've conceded. So that's what it's built on. Because when you can do that, it allows these world-class players, Foden, Gundogan, and, you know, De Bruyne when he's playing, and Sterling, they'll always get you goals. Man City will always score goals. Liverpool usually always score goals, but unfortunately, at the minute, confidence has been drained out with it in Liverpool, whereas confidence is sky high in Manchester City.
You were a centre half. You're watching Ruben Dias there. Okay, he made one bad mistake today, but probably the first mistake he's made all season. He's only 23. He seems to have the leadership qualities. He seems to have it all.
Yeah.
Talk about him as a centre half and what it is he does.
Everything you'd want from him. You know, and even the mistake he made today, Pep Guardiola won't be worried about that, because he'll know that if you take the kind of, I wouldn't even call them risks, but chances that he takes. I've watched him so much. He does that so often, where he sweeps across and doesn't just kick it into touch, or doesn't just hook it away for a centre-forward. He will try and control the ball and find a pass. And that's what the manager asks of him. But the manager will understand that there will be times he will get it wrong. Usually it won't lead to a goal, but I suppose a mistake he made today was pulling back Salah, because I think John Stones was round on the cover, and maybe Salah still would have scored, but John Stones would have had a chance. So his mistake today wasn't the controlling the ball, it was pulling back the shirt. But he's got everything you'd want. Size, stature. We saw him swat Firmino aside in the first half when Firmino was coming square across the pitch and he just pushed him out of the way. He's got everything, and he's helped John Stones as well.
Speaking about players who've got everything, Phil Foden, 20 years of age. The run to capitalise on the mistake from Alisson and to lift the head and to spot the run of Gundogan. Yeah. And then the finish.
Yeah.
How good is he now, and where is he going over the next 4 or 5 years?
Well, I suppose it was always a running joke that Pep would come up and say that he's a world-class talent and never play him for the last number of years, right? And he's obviously grooming him and getting him to a point where he would be not only a world-class footballer, but world-class tactically as well. And if you look at the amount of positions that he plays for Manchester City, left wing, right wing, false nine, as a 10, I mean, that just tells you that the understanding and belief that Pep has in him. And he probably spent those 2 years when he was working with him, instilling that in him, getting that understanding of the game, because he knew he had the talent. Everybody saw him, you know, with the England underage setup. He had that talent. But Pep has obviously seen that he had the mental ability or the mental aptitude to take on board what he's being asked. And you can only imagine what's being asked of him by a manager as meticulous and as fine detail as what Pep is. To be able to play all those positions for Pep Guardiola shows an incredible aptitude for the game.
What is his best position? What's the position in 3-4 years' time, you think? Is he a number 10? Is he a winger? Is he a number 8?
I think his best attribute is the fact that he's as intelligent as what he is. I don't think he'll ever nail down a position. I think Pep will continuously rotate him, you know, and he can fill him in any position. I suppose ultimately the only person that can answer that question would be Phil Foden. Where would you like to play? Where's your favourite position? What would you... And I'd probably guarantee he'd say number 10. He looks like the guy that would want to be central and involved in the game all the time. But he does great on the wings, does great as a false nine for Pep. So his greatest attribute is his aptitude, his intelligence, and his willingness to learn.
The OTB Podcast Network with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.